Maybe not.
House Committee on Judiciary come to order. Today is March 27th, 2017, and we're going out of order of the posted schedule. We're going to open a public hearing on House Bill 3279 and call Senator Manning.
Thank you, Chair Barker. Members of the committee, House Bill 3279 was brought to us by Representative Leininger. Under Oregon law, labor contractors may not provide services without a license issued by the Bureau of Labor and Industries and must pass a test before a license is issued. Labor contractors include construction labor contractors and farm labor contractors. Often these labor contractors do not perform the labor directly but supply individuals to businesses needing those services. House Bill 3279 adds a new category of labor contractors required to be licensed and tested by BOLI, property service contractors, which includes those who supply others for janitorial or security services. There is a dash one that makes several amendments or changes, including requiring existing examination for license to operate as a labor contractor to include applicants' knowledge of employer's responsibility to prevent sexual assault and harassment and remove staffing agencies from exclusion as property services contractor. There is no revenue impact, and there is a fiscal impact on the dash one amendment.
Thank you, Senator.
Thank you, Chair Barker and Vice Chairs Williamson and Olson and members of the committee. My name is James Ivory Manning, Jr. I am the senator from Senate District 7, which is Eugene and Junction City. I'm here in support of House Bill 3279, the Janitorial Registration Bill. This bill would require that property service contracts such as janitors and security officers be protected respect to sexual harassment, discrimination, and whistleblower protections in the workplace. In the security and janitorial industries, women are especially susceptible to harassment in the male-dominant industries. As many as 50% of the sexual harassed at some point in their work life. And because these contract workers are often afraid to report cases of harassment, today we have an environment where safe working conditions should be the norm. And I'm kind of a setback that we're still in a position where we have to even argue this point at this time. The bill strengthens protections for these workers, provide training, and creates an environment where every worker can feel safe and do their job, knowing that if they are to encounter an issue, they can call for them to report someone's conduct, that they can do so without fear of losing a job or any type of harassment or retaliation. I urge your support for House Bill 3279.
Okay, thank you. Representative Leininger.
Chair Barker, members of the committee, I'm Ann Leininger, state representative for House District 38, Lake Oswego in Southwest Portland. I'm proud to be here together with my co-chief sponsor, Senator Manning, in support of House Bill 3279. There is a real safety issue right now for workers in the janitorial field. This is a largely female group of workers, and often they do their work late at night in office buildings that are absolutely vacant, but for a couple of people who are doing this cleaning job, who are separated out across different floors, who essentially are working with no other eyes on them to assure their safety. And this group of workers is frequently extremely vulnerable to a range of harms, including wage theft, sexual predation, sexual harassment, and sexual assault by the very people who are supposed to supervise them. And even when protections exist, this industry, the janitorial sector, and also security officers can be employed by businesses that are sort of fly-by-night companies and contractors and subcontractors that could dissolve the business just as easily as continue operating and be held accountable if there's wrongdoing. So in House Bill 3279 will strengthen the protections to prevent sexual violence against this vulnerable group of workers by ensuring that contractors have to comply with labor and employment laws. Specifically, this measure would create a registry of contractors of the companies that will be required. the contractors have to register and indicate, you know, their addresses and how many people they employ, so that there's a registry of the businesses, and they have to receive training through BOLI to make sure that supervisors and the businesses themselves understand some of the rules that we have around sexual harassment prevention, sexual assault prevention. And there's a great group of witnesses here today to talk about why we need this bill. But I'll tell you that there is a film that I saw recently called Rape on the Night Shift, which is it's sort of a documentary, a news story about a lot of people who have suffered from this harm. And between the firsthand testimony of people and this really stark evidence, I think it's clear that, you know, we care about vulnerable people, and this is a very vulnerable group of people. And this registry and training in the bill would go a long way to helping make sure that people have accountability and have some protections for their safety. So thank you for considering this matter today.
Any questions? Representative Vile.
First of all, Senator Manning, as a former drill sergeant, you must be in pain to have the voice difficulties that you're experiencing today. I'm sorry. For both of you, I like the concept, and I'm encouraged by this as a good step toward solving what I've begun to understand as a real problem. I'm worried because we use the term property services contractor that we don't then cover the people that are hired by the business owner or the property owner directly, that we've not covered a significant group of people. I know my law firm, which is quite large now, has offices in about 5 states. We probably employ 10 or 12 janitorial people full time, but as I read the bill, we would be exempt from requiring that kind of training among our supervisors to those employees. So I'm wondering if that's something that you might consider.
Well, I tell you, I, for one, am very open to hearing the feedback of the committee during this hearing. And as to specific potential amendments, I would leave it to the people who are going to come after us, who may have more technical expertise in the bill, to help pinpoint how to operationalize feedback that we can incorporate. But thank you for bringing a constructive eye to how we can move forward.
I want to say I concur with Ed. Thank you so much, too. I am experiencing some difficulties lately, so I do apologize to the committee. Being a drill sergeant for so long and so many years and stuff, you know, you tend to use out your voice. You don't realize how much vocal cords are actually needed until you actually need them. Thank you.
Thank you. And, Representative, there are more additional amendments to come to this bill, so thank you.
So, Mr. Chair, I just have one Please. Question of Senator Manning. Which committee is the better looking, House, Judiciary, or Senate?
Be careful.
Vice Chair, Chair, since I am sitting here before you, then I would give all those honors to you right now.
I for one, do not want to compete with Senator Manning when it comes to sartorial exercise, but I'll tell you that right now.
Hey, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. And thanks for coming over, Senator.
Thank you.
Call Felisa Higgins, Adula Massa, Rania Castillejos, I think.
Chair Barker and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Felisa Higgins. I'm the political director at SEIU Local 49. I know.
Oh, no, not another one.
And so, to continue the trend, none of us will either be speaking in English or with a correct voice for the rest of the hearing. We're here today in support of House Bill 3279. SEIU represents over 3,000 property services workers as defined by this bill throughout the state of Oregon. We have seen since, thank you, so kind. We have seen since we've started, saw the Frontline video and the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission of the federal government reached out to us regarding this issue, that it is a very serious issue. As Representative Leininger pointed out, many of our folks who work in these industries are either women who work in a male-dominated industry, or they are janitors who are often immigrants who work alone at night. Representative Leininger pointed out, often in a commercial building site, but we also represent hundreds of workers who work what we call route workers in the industry, and they travel from site to site. And so often the only person who knows that they're gonna be at a location actually is themselves and their supervisor for hours at a time. And with the power dynamics within the industry, it's clear that this industry has been rife with sexual harassment, but also sexual assault. We feel like this bill does a step forward. We don't believe this bill is going to fundamentally solve the problem of sexual assault in the workplace, but we think it takes a giant leap forward for this industry. And you'll have testimony from the Ramon Ramirez from the farm workers, who have a registry similar to this, can talk about the successes there. But also, Bully, there are some amendments, as Representative Barker pointed out, that we'd like to offer to the bill. So the -1 amendments, which you have before you, but we also need to do some clarifying amendments. You know, the clarifying a will versus may in whether Bully imposes fines or not. Clarifying the training is either from Bully or certified by Bully. So a lot of folks have federal contracts where they are already required to do a federal training. And so we want them to have that training count as well. And then cleaning up a definition of a contractor. I think to Representative Vile's point, it does leave out a lot of folks that we call in-house janitorial. So janitorials you hire directly are in-house security officers. We sort of thought that this was a starting place. That's a whole other ball of wax to count those folks. And subcontracted janitorial and subcontracted security is the vast majority of workers who work in this industry. In-house is becoming more and more rare of an occurrence, but we'd be very open to thinking about that in the future. So I'm happy to answer questions now or later. I'm sure everybody wants to sit with me. We also did a clip of the video that Representative Leininger referred to, of the video called Rape on the Night Shift, that I'd like to, let's see if I can play that for you now. We'll see, it's technology, so I'm sure it's broken. There's no sound. Like I said, it's technology, so it's broken. We can play. This is the, I just, also for the record, this is clearly the kindest committee that I've testified before with lozenges and waters. So while we work on that, I can talk a little bit more, but why don't we go ahead and move on to some of the workers that have come here today to testify. Adela.
At the end of the day, when most of the world goes home, a nearly invisible workforce clocks in. Millions of janitors clean walls, banks, big box stores, the office where you work. Many janitors are women who work at night, empty buildings, in isolation, and that can put them in danger.
Trabajar como ya en esta noche es muy pesado y muy riesgoso. Siempre anda uno solo, pues siempre anda uno cuidándose. Llegaba uno, se presentaba, y le daban sus llaves y ya le decían a uno, te toca tal piso. veces todo un piso o veces dos.
Maria Bohorquez cleaned offices in San Francisco's iconic Ferry Building.
Siempre me tenía que reportar al supervisor. Empezó como primero a que uno le tuviera confianza. Primero empezó con halagos. Y después trataba como de agarrar algo, pero me rozaba los senos. O veces se me agarraba. O a veces yo le decía que me iba a quejar y me decía, no te van a creer. Yo decía, nunca va a llegar ese momento, pero llegó. En un descuido que me di, no sé cómo pasó todo, fue como... segundos, todo rápido, bueno, a veces me hizo rápido y a veces me hizo largo. Y ya fue cuando él me forcejó, me tumbó y yo ya no supe. Yo no pensaba en nada.
What happened to Maria Bohorquez is not an isolated incident. According to the Department of Justice, there are more than 17,000 sexual assaults at work a year. We began investigating this 3 years ago and found it was rampant among women farm workers who are often undocumented and isolated. Now we have discovered a similar pattern of violent sexual abuse against women janitors who work the night shift. We have uncovered cases of sexual assault and rape at companies large and small. And in the darkest corners of this industry, janitors who were sexually assaulted and even held captive by their bosses.
These women work every day to feed their family and trying to do the best they can.
Sexual harassment laws in the workplace. The EEOC cannot bring criminal charges against alleged perpetrators, but it can sue a perpetrator's employer.
The common thing is employers not taking these complaints seriously. We started seeing over time more physical, aggressive harassment, women being raped, subject to sexual battery.
That's just a clip of the hour and a half long documentary from Frontline that goes into substantially more detail about the industry. We've submitted the clip, and I'm happy to submit the full documentary for which you can watch later. So with that, I'm happy to answer questions now or at the end.
Okay, questions, okay.
Please.
Go
ahead.
Adela. Adela, ¿qué pasa? Sí. ¿Ya? ¿Ya vienes el micrófono?
Sí.
Hola, mi nombre es Adela. Buenas tardes. Mi nombre es Adela. Trabajo en limpieza en ABM hace 17 años.
Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Adela Massa. I am a janitor with ABM. I've been working for ABM for 17 years.
Y también soy miembro de delegada de la Unión SEIU Local 49.
I'm a member and shop steward with my union, SEIU Local 49.
Quiero aplicar un poco sobre el trabajo de limpieza para apoyar el proyecto de ley HB 3279.
I want to explain a little bit about the work of a janitor to support House Bill 3279.
El trabajo de limpiar edificios y oficinas es pesado.
The work of a janitor cleaning buildings and offices is heavy.
La mayoría de nosotros trabajamos desde las 5:30 hasta las 2 de la mañana.
The majority of us work from 5:30 p.m. at night until 2 a.m. in the morning.
Yo limpio un edificio grande en el centro de Portland en un equipo de 4 trabajadores de limpieza.
I clean a large building in downtown Portland with a team of four janitors.
Y con un supervisor. Para nosotros cada noche, cada uno de nosotros limpiar varios pisos completos. Todo limpiamos oficinas y baños.
With one supervisor for each of us at night. Each one of us cleans several floors with all of the offices and bathrooms.
Eso lo hacemos solos. Pasamos más de dos horas solos a la vez, completamente solos en los pisos, y nos juntamos solo cuando descansamos para almorzar.
We do this alone. We spend more or less 2 hours at a time completely alone on the floor, and we only get together for breaks and lunches.
De un turno de 8 horas, estoy sola en el piso por 7 horas.
In 1 8-hour shift, I'm alone for more or less 7 hours.
Ser parte de la unión nos ayuda a que nuestras compañías y los clientes nos escuchen.
Being part of the union helps us to be heard by our companies and the clients.
Yo apoyo esta legislación para que todos los trabajadores de limpieza, si son organizados o no, tengan derecho y respeto, seguridad en el trabajo.
I support this legislation so that all janitors, organized or not, can have rights, respect, and safety on the job.
Muchas gracias.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Buenas tardes. Trabajo para una compañía de limpieza grande aquí en Portland.
Good afternoon. I work for a large janitorial company here in Portland.
He trabajado como janitor por más de 8 años.
I've worked as a janitor for over 8 years.
Excuse me. We need to state the name for the record.
Oh, mi nombre es Reina.
My name is Reina.
And last name?
Castillejos.
Castillejos.
Okay, thank you.
Trabajo para una compañía de limpieza grande aquí en Portland.
I work for a large janitorial company here in Portland.
He trabajado como janitor por más de 8 años.
I've worked as a janitor for over 8 years.
Yo estoy casado, tengo 2 hijas y trabajo para apoyar a mi familia.
I'm married, I have 2 daughters, and I work to support my family.
Desde que llegué al edificio más reciente, yo fui acosada por un compañero casi diariamente.
Since I began cleaning my most recent building, I was harassed by a coworker almost daily.
Me seguía en los elevadores y cuando yo estaba sola.
He would follow me around when I was alone and in the elevators.
Me trataba de besar y tocar, y cuando yo le decía que no, me amenazaba.
He would try to kiss me and touch me, and when I said no, he threatened me.
Me dijo que si yo fuera a reportarlo, me iba a secuestrar a mí y a mis niñas.
He told me that if I reported him, he would kidnap me and my girls.
Por miedo, yo no pude reportar el acoso.
Out of fear, I couldn't report the harassment.
Una noche, yo estaba limpiando un baño. Él entró y cerró la puerta del baño.
One night, I was cleaning a bathroom when he came in and locked the door of the bathroom.
Me agarró las manos detrás de mí y me empujó a la pared y me dijo, al fin obtengo lo que quería.
He grabbed my hands from behind me, pushed me against the wall, and said, finally, I'm going to get what I've wanted.
Me dijo que nadie me iba a oír si yo gritaba.
He told me that if I screamed, no one was going to hear me.
Me atrapó y me violó.
He trapped me and raped me.
En ese momento, todo se me bloqueó.
At that moment, everything went blank.
Era como si el tiempo no existiera. Y me quedé paralizada.
It felt like time did not exist and I was left paralyzed.
Después, cuando salió, mi abusador se rió y me dijo que nadie me iba a creer, que era su palabra contra la mía.
Afterwards, when he left, my abuser laughed and told me no one was going to believe me and that it was his word against mine.
Fue muy difícil, pero hablé con mi esposo de lo que sucedió y juntos fuimos a hablar con la unión.
It was very difficult, but I spoke with my husband about what happened, and together we went to the union.
Ellos me ayudaron a tomar ausencia de trabajo, hacer investigación con la compañía, y conseguir abogada y terapista.
They helped me to get leave from work, begin a company investigation, find a lawyer, and to begin therapy.
Ahora estoy tomando los primeros pasos de recuperarme de lo que sobreviví sin miedo, sin tener que ver a mi abusador cada día en el trabajo.
I am now taking the first steps towards healing from what I have survived without fear and without having to see my abuser every day at work.
Hay muchas personas que por miedo o amenazas no quieren hablar.
There are many people who, because of fears or threats, do not speak up.
Y cuando uno trabaja sola en la noche sin nadie que esté, es más peligroso en estos tipos de abusos.
And when one works alone at night without anyone who is there, they're in more danger of these types of abuses.
Los abusadores usan estas condiciones y nuestros miedos contra nosotros.
And the abusers use these conditions and our fears against us.
En mi caso, mi abusador sabía que quería mucho a mis hijas y que tenía miedo de perder mi trabajo.
In my case, my abuser knew that I loved my daughters dearly and that I was afraid of losing my job.
Él pensó que yo no tenía recursos ni la información de mis derechos para hablar.
He thought that I did not have the resources or the knowledge about my rights to come forward.
Es mi deseo que nadie más pase por lo que yo pasé.
It's my wish that nobody else goes through what I had to go through.
Este proyecto de ley va a ayudar a los trabajadores más invisibles.
This bill will help the most invisible of workers.
Especialmente los que trabajan para compañías pequeñas donde no hay uniones o tantos recursos para quejar.
Especially those that work for small companies where there aren't unions or resources for coming forward.
Estas personas necesitan el apoyo del gobierno para reclamar sus derechos.
These persons need the support of the government in order to exercise their rights.
Les pido que voten sí para este proyecto de ley y que hagan todo posible para proteger a los trabajadores para que no le pase a nadie más. Gracias.
I ask you to vote yes on this bill and to do everything possible to protect workers so that this doesn't happen to anybody else. Thank you.
Thank you, and we really appreciate the special testimony that she gave. It's very difficult, and we all really understand that. And really, really appreciate your coming in and being willing to testify before the committee. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Leticia Carmona, Corina Ball, Ramon Ramirez, please.
Muy buenas tardes. Mi nombre es Leticia Carmona y vivo cerca de McMinnville, Oregon.
Good afternoon. My name is Leticia Carmona and I live near McMinnville, Oregon.
El año pasado, mi esposo Félix y yo trabajamos para una pequeña empresa de limpieza en Beaverton.
Last summer, my husband Felix and I worked for a small janitorial company in Beaverton.
Esta pequeña empresa recibió sus contratos de limpieza de otra empresa de limpieza establecida con más tiempo y más grande llamada Vanguard.
This small company received its cleaning contracts from a larger, more established janitorial company called Vanguard.
Limpiamos oficinas médicas y un lote de coches por las noches.
We cleaned medical offices and a car dealership in the evenings.
Al principio nos pagaban a $9.50 la hora.
At first we were each paid $9.50 an hour.
Después de unos meses nos ofrecieron algo que a nosotros nos pareció que era una buena oferta.
After a few months we were offered what we thought was going to be a great deal.
Nos ofrecieron nuestra propia franquicia de limpieza.
We were offered to our own cleaning franchise.
Por un costo de $1,500.
In exchange for a franchise fee of $1,500.
Nos prometieron realizar tareas de limpieza adicionales y la cantidad recibida sería dividida entre la empresa de limpieza y nosotros, donde se supone que ganaríamos el 75% y la compañía se quedaría con el 25% de cada trabajo de limpieza realizado.
We were promised additional cleaning assignments and a split with the janitorial company where we would earn 75% and pay the company 25% of each cleaning job.
Esto nos sonó como una buena inversión para nuestro futuro.
This sounded like a good investment in our future.
Pero la verdad es que solo nos engañaron y no obtuvimos nuestros salarios.
As it turned out, this just cheated us out of our wages.
Nos decía la dueña de la franquicia que no nos estaba pagando y esto fue por 3 meses y medio, ya que todo esto nuestro sueldo fue para pagar la franquicia de $1,500.
The owner of the franchise told us we would not we would not be paid our salaries for 3.5 months since all our salary was going to pay off the $1,500 franchise fee.
Estábamos haciendo el mismo trabajo bajo la dirección de la misma gente, con la única diferencia que era ya no, que ahora ya no recibimos nada de sueldo.
We were doing the same work under the direction of the same people, and the only difference was we didn't get paid.
Cuando terminamos de pagar la franquicia con nuestro trabajo de limpieza de 3 meses y medio, se suponía que ya empezaríamos a trabajar por nuestra franquicia.
After we finished paying the franchise fee by cleaning for 3.5 months, we were supposed to start working under our own franchise.
Empezamos con la limpieza de un lote de carros todos los días de la semana por 4 horas cada día.
We started with cleaning a car dealership every day of the week for 4 hours a day.
Continuamos trabajando en el lote de carros por 2 meses más sin recibir un solo centavo.
We continued working on the car lot for 2 more months, not receiving a single penny. We also had to buy our own cleaning supplies and pay for gasoline to travel to the job sites.
Trabajamos 2 meses gratis limpiando una oficina de lentes también.
We also cleaned a eyeglass store.
Tuvimos que comprar nuestros propios artículos de limpieza y pagar por la gasolina para viajar a los sitios de trabajo.
We had to buy our own gasoline, pay for our travel to the job sites.
Nos sentimos engañados por la oferta de nuestra propia franquicia cuando todo esto significaba que estábamos haciendo el mismo trabajo duro que habíamos estado haciendo siempre, pero trabajando de manera gratuita.
We feel we were tricked by the offer of our own franchise when all this meant was doing the same hard work we had been doing, but working for free.
Ahora, la compañía de limpieza cerró el negocio y está declarándose en bancarrota.
Now the smaller janitorial company has gone out of business and is filing for bankruptcy.
La empresa Vanguard dice que no son responsables de lo que nos hizo la compañía más pequeña.
The Vanguard company says it is not responsible for what the smaller company did to us.
Vanguard se benefició de nuestro trabajo. La empresa más grande nos deben de las empresas más grandes no deben de poder contratar empresas más pequeñas para hacer su trabajo.
Vanguard benefited from our work. Bigger companies should not be able to hire smaller companies to do their work.
Y luego no tener ninguna responsabilidad cuando la pequeña empresa rompe la ley.
And then have no responsibility when the small company breaks the law.
Si van a utilizar subcontratistas, deben contratar con empresas responsables para pagar.
If they're going to use subcontractors, they should contract with responsible businesses.
No estamos seguros si seremos pagados. He hablado con muchas otras parejas que encontraron en acuerdos similares y se toparon con problemas iguales a los nuestros.
We are not sure if we will be paid. I have talked to many other couples who entered into similar agreements and ran into problems just like the ones I explained.
Esto no es justo. Trabajamos duro, hicimos lo que acordamos. Esto mismo está sucediendo a demasiadas personas en nuestro estado. El proyecto de ley que está considerando hoy daría a los trabajadores como yo una solución a un problema muy grande.
This is not fair. We worked hard and we lived up to our end of the agreement. The same thing is happening to too many people in our state. The bill you are considering today would give workers like me a solution to a very big problem.
¿Y qué hacer cuando a uno le deben dinero de una compañía que no quiere pagarte?
What to do when you are owed money by a company who does not want to pay you?
Y es todo. Muchas gracias.
That's it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Chair Barker and members of the House Judiciary Committee, my name is Ramon Ramirez, and I'm president of the Oregon Farm Worker Union. And on behalf of our members, 6,500 members, we wish to express our full support for House Bill 3279, the licensing of building service contractors. PECUN is Oregon's farm worker union. We work to improve the living and working conditions of agricultural workers in the state of Oregon. Even though this bill does not cover farm workers or agricultural workers, a similar law exists that covers farm labor contractors and has existed since 1956. So since 1956, we've had that law on the books here in Oregon. And there'll be other people testifying on the farm worker piece after me. But I just want to say that I've been actively working on strengthening the farm labor contractor bill since 1982. That was actually the first time I was in this building doing lobbying to try to improve the working conditions of farm labor contractors working with reforestation workers back then. We believe that the time has come to regulate this industry. Many of the contractors that are now working in cleaning buildings up in Portland are actually worked in as farm labor contractors using many of the same workers. We've had, there's been a changeover of the workforce. We're seeing more and more farm worker women working in cleaning buildings that are recruited from the Northern Willamette Valley and Washington County to go and work in clean office buildings in Portland. There exist a lot of problems. I mean, not only that workers' wages are being shortchanged for hours, not getting paid. There's wholesale violations of minimum wage laws, and sexual harassment is just the tip of the iceberg. We've documented many cases of wage fraud where we couldn't even find the labor contractor. After doing case review of trying to figure out who is the employer, right? So you have the name of the company, but it turns out that there was layers and layers and layers of subcontractors. So we could never pinpoint, who the employer was to try to recover lost wages of an employee. So we believe that that it's time for these contractors to be regulated, have to be registered. Sexual harassment in this industry is just runs rapidly. As you've seen in the video clip, this first came to light back around 10 years ago when PECUN and a number of other organizations working with farm workers started receiving a lot of complaints from farm worker women that they were not only being harassed sexually in the workplace, but some of them were even being raped. If you see that clip and you see the one that the movie before that, the documentary before that, it's called Rape in the Fields. Some of those cases actually generated from work that PECUN did in educating and working with women that have been victimized by sexual harassment, actually raped in the fields from a farm not only 15 miles from here, right? We were able to recover in one case $250,000. The other one was about $200,000. But this is a real problem, right? Because while this bill will go a step in the right direction at registering contractors and going after the bad characters, not all these companies are bad, but going after the bad actors. What we found was that in terms of sexual harassment, there's got to be something done that goes beyond that. While we support this legislation, Felicia said, it's just the beginning, right? For example, in all the cases I've documented, at least 50 or more sexual harassment, at least 4 cases of rape in the field, and the perpetrators of that crime have never been brought to justice. When I talk about step in the right direction, yeah, well, let's register these labor contractors. Let's get them trained. Let's get education done, but that might not be enough, right? So I think that this building, I think this committee has not only the legal obligation to do the right thing and registering labor contractors and making sure that they've been trained, that they've been educated on sexual harassment, but it's our moral obligation to do so. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, members of the House Committee. My name is Karina Spencer-Sherrick. I'm Deputy Director of the Northwest Workers' Justice Project. NWJP is dedicated to providing high-quality legal support and advocacy to workers, and we focus on the most marginalized by current structure of our economy, specifically low-wage immigrant and contingent workers in diverse industries, but including janitorial. I'm here to support HB 3279. Based on my experience and that of my coworkers and representing janitorial workers in employment disputes, the industry is rife with abuses. And those abuses particularly affect low-wage and immigrant workers. One of the biggest problems that we see are fly-by-night janitorial companies that advertise for workers on Craigslist and other internet online publications. Workers labor in isolated conditions, often at night, as we've heard. Often these undercapitalized companies or individuals simply fail to pay their workers and then go bankrupt or evade the collection of wages because they have disappeared and have no resources. Every week, we talk to hardworking Oregonians who have done the work, but have not been paid, and there's simply nothing that we can do to protect their rights. One of our clients, who I'll call Brenda, was a victim of repeated problems in the janitorial industry. She first worked for a small janitorial company, cleaning a mechanic shop, a grocery store, a beauty shop, and a recycling center. Her employer only paid her once and then fired her before paying without paying the rest of her wages. She filed a small claims suit on her own against the contractor, but he filed for bankruptcy in the middle of her case. She received a small sum from the bankruptcy case, but much of her wages and damages remain unpaid to this day. She then got what she thought was a more established position, cleaning a chain of national fitness centers. She was not paid overtime by the janitorial company contractor, and her hours were arbitrarily reduced on her paycheck. The national fitness center chain had contracted with an out-of-state janitorial company who had contracted with another out-of-state janitorial company who had contracted with Brenda's immediate Oregon employer. When she tried to collect the unpaid overtime wages, the Oregon contractor had dissolved and had no assets. Unfortunately, Brenda's stories are not unique. Her common wage and hour violations include not paying travel time, making employees work off the clock, paying a piece rate, like a flat rate per office or building that does not add up to the minimum wage, and misclassifying workers as independent contractors when they are employees. We also see out-of-state janitorial companies violate the particular protections under Oregon state law. A client who I'll call Fernanda cleaned a large department store for an Ohio contractor. When Fernanda's mother-in-law became deathly ill and her family flew to Mexico to care for her, the contractor, not aware of Oregon family leave law that protects this absence, fired her. When we filed the case with Boley, neither the Human Rights Department in Ohio nor the local management company wanted to take responsibility for knowing or the violation of state law. Oregon's janitorial workers often labor alone, doing difficult work when the rest of us are not looking. They're in desperate need of protection, the kind of protection that HB 3279 would finally afford them. We recommend that this bill be approved with a due pass recommendation. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Thank you, panel. Next, I'll call Michael Dale, Sybil Hebb, and Nellie DeVries. We do have some more bills today we've got to work through, so if you...
I'll be very short. Yeah,
thank you.
Chair Barker, members of the committee, my name is Michael Dale. Currently, I am the director of the Northwest Worker Justice Project. I'm here today more because during the 1980s and 90s, I worked for Migrant Legal Services and was intimately involved with the development of the statute that you're proposing in this bill to move janitorial companies into. And I would just simply say that it's a long, hard process. I would not expect immediate results, but gradually as registration becomes the norm, what we've seen in the farm labor industry is, you know, I'm not going to say everything's copacetic and everything's perfect, but it's much, much better than the Wild West that existed prior. The same is true with reforestation, which was made subject to the Act. We've begun to move labor brokers in construction into the statute. We're at the very beginning of that process, but I believe that over time the same thing is going to happen there, and I would strongly recommend adoption of this bill to provide the same protections to janitorial workers. If people have questions about the bill or the structure of the law or anything like that, I'm happy to provide a response, but I think I'll leave my testimony at that.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair Barker, members of the committee. Sybil Hebb with the Oregon Law Center here in support of House Bill 3279 as well. As you know, the Law Center's mission is to help people to escape poverty and to achieve access to justice. And what we find is that domestic and sexual violence are a huge barrier to justice and trap people in poverty and prohibit them from achieving their full potential. And what we have seen is that domestic violence or sexual assault at the workplace is an even bigger issue. If there is sexual assault at the workplace, not only are there the severe physical, psychological, mental health, and other traumas that a victim may suffer, but also her economic and financial security is at risk and is threatened. And so a person's ability to try to support themselves and their family is hindered if the employer is not doing his or her best to prohibit sexual assault, to prevent it, to respond adequately and well. And the training and the registration that is required as a part of this bill will help provide some greater oversight, greater training, hopefully greater prevention, and that's to the benefit of the public health of all Oregonians. So we really appreciate your help. Thank you.
Thank you.
Chair Barker, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Nellie DeVries, and I'm here on behalf of the Building Owners and Managers Association. BOMA Oregon is a commercial real estate organization representing over 45 million square feet of commercial real estate in the state. We are supportive of the overall concept of House Bill 3279. It's atrocious that these things are actually still occurring within our state. We believe that creating this register of janitorial firms without major abuses allows building owners to choose contractors who have some basic training and screening on violations, which would really be a benefit to our members. BOMA Oregon supports the overall concept, but we do have a few concerns, which we look forward to working with BOLI and SEIU and other bill sponsors on, just kind of small little changes or clarifications for that matter. The first is just kind of clarifying what the financial impact of this is on the building owners and contractors. We also are interested in pursuing something like the Oregon Real Estate Agency does in terms of their random auditing and licensing. Apparently, they do not charge the contractors for that process, and so we're interested in looking into that a little bit more. And as SEIU mentioned in prior testimony, we're also looking at clarifying the process of distributing training materials. So it sounds like we're all on the same page and just making sure that we know exactly how and the most effective way of doing that. And then finally, changing the language for BOLI's assessment of fines from will assess fines to may assess fines. That small change. But with that, I'm trying to keep this brief for you all. I know you have other bills. But thank you for bringing this forward. And overall, BOMA is definitely in support of this language with a few small tweaks.
Okay, thank you. Questions? Thank you very much, panel. Nan Heim, excuse me, and Betsy Earls. No, Betsy? No, here she is, yeah.
Thank you, Chair Barker, Vice Chair Williamson, and Vice Chair Olson. Well, not here. My name is Nan Heim, and I represent the Oregon Resource Association, formerly known as the Oregon Rehabilitation Association. Our members are 65 nonprofit organizations throughout the state that provide support services, including housing and employment services, to Oregonians with disabilities. Our members have some concerns about this bill, but not about the basic intent. I want to make that very clear. 35 of our 65 members have met the qualifications to participate for public contracting under the Products of Disabled Individuals Law. That's 279.835 through 855. And they do contracting to provide goods and services to public agencies throughout the state, including some do janitorial services. We have requested an amendment that would exempt our programs from some of the regulatory provisions of this bill, but not the training. We actually think the training would be a good idea, and we'd be happy to have our members, our managers, have that training on sexual assault and sexual harassment. And we'd be happy to work with the sponsors of the bill on further amendments. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Betsy Earls, representing Associated Oregon Industries. AOI is entirely understanding of the problems that are raised by this bill and equally concerned about those. We are also concerned, however, about adding security providers, security professionals to the list of contractors that are covered by the bill. Currently, security training is regulated, as you may know, by DPSST, which also licenses those providers. We're concerned about adding another security or adding another regulatory agency to the oversight of those particular providers. And we'd like to talk with the proponents some more about finding a way to manage that. We are particularly concerned for the security contractors about the new sections 5 and 6, under the dash one amendments. And I believe section 5 under the dash one amendments would prohibit a property services contractor from requiring an employee to work alone at a property that's vacant, abandoned, or similarly uninhabited. A couple of my security provider members pointed out that in many cases, the entire reason that they are hired is to secure those vacant and abandoned buildings, and requiring employers to include more than one security provider in situations like that forces the company that's hiring those contractors, obviously, to pay for more than one employee. So there's some concern there. So overall, we are in line with the objectives of the bill, but we have serious questions about including security providers in the list of contractors covered by it.
Okay, thank you. And what the plans are today is to put the dash ones in and then not finish the bill off today because there are more amendments coming. So that'd be great if you could work with the other parties. Yes,
could I ask?
You surely could.
I just wanted to ask, does that mean AOI would support the bill if the security companies were taken out?
Mr. Chair and Representative Greenlink, we would certainly talk about doing that.
Talk about
it. I can't make a commitment like that without going back and talking to my members, but I would be happy to do that. Okay. I can tell you that I don't think there would be any objection.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative. Thank you, panel. You want to tell us about the dash ones?
Are we in work session?
We will be in a second.
I know very little about
it. Close a public hearing, open a work session with the intent of putting the dash one amendments in.
Mr. Chair, I move the dash one amendments to House Bill 3279.
Representative Williamson moves the dash one amendments in the House Bill 3279. And as I said, we expect to have more amendments coming, so we won't be moving the bill today.
Do you want me to?
Yeah, if you want to.
Thank you, Chair Barker, members of the committee. Just briefly, the dash one amendment removes person with property services contract with owner of real property where services are performed from exclusion as property services contractor, removes staffing agencies from exclusion as property services contractor, and it also prohibits contractor from requiring an employee to work alone on vacant or abandoned property. It also requires existing examination for license to operate as a labor contractor to include applicants' knowledge of employers' responsibility to prevent sexual assault and harassment.
Okay, thank you. Any discussion about the dash ones? Any or questions? Any objections? Seeing none, so ordered, and then we'll close the work session on that, but continue to work on the bill. Okay, thank you. Next up,
yeah.
Open a public hearing on House Bill 2986.
Thank you, Chair Barker, members of the committee. The Oregon Probate Code was adopted in 1969. In 2013, the Probate Modernization Workgroup of the Oregon Law Commission was formed to review and recommend changes to the code. House Bill 2986 is the 2017 Probate Modernization Recommendation from the Oregon Law Commission. There is also a dash one amendment for your consideration, but we are still waiting on the fiscal and revenue impact statements.
Okay, thank you. Colleen Shetterly, Susan Gary, and Laura Hansel.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Lane Shetterly, I am an attorney in Dallas and chair of the Oregon Law Commission and also chair of the particular work group that brings House Bill 2986 to you. It represents the third of what will probably be a four-part effort, four-step effort to modernize and make amendments to Oregon's probate code. Briefly, for those of you who may not remember last year's seminar on probate, probate is the process by which property is transferred from a decedent to that decedent's heirs, either under a will or, if there is no will, through the laws of intestate succession. And it is also the process that protects creditors and provides a process for creditors' claims to be paid in the process of administering the estate as it is distributed to the beneficiaries. Our effort here has been in the last 3 years to update the probate code. It has been several years since the probate code has been looked at comprehensively. We began in 2015 with amendments primarily to wills and the laws of intestate succession. Last session, we dealt with definitional sections and other kind of broad overarching sections on the code. And in this session, we bring you changes and updates to the process by which an estate moves through the court in a probate. I really think, in the interest of time, I'll leave my comments at that. Professor Susan Gary is the reporter for the work group. She has prepared the committee report, the work group report that you have before you, that will make part of the legislative history. She can explain the Dash A1 amendments as well, and then Laura Hansel will follow with some general comments, and I'll be happy to answer questions if you have any after they're done.
Please.
Thank you, Chair Barker, members of the committee. I will just mention a few highlights. You have the report, and in the interest of time, I won't cover every detail, but I have pulled out a few things that may be of particular interest. The first is one of the modernization provisions has to do with notice. Notice is, of course, very important. One of the changes clarifies that a court can permit electronic notice, something that we're trying to move toward, and also permits DHS to adopt rules permitting DHS to accept electronic notice. Some of the changes are of that nature, trying to move us a little more in the direction of electronic proceedings. One of the more interesting changes has to do with the compensation for personal representatives. The work group heard concerns from practitioners and also from the probate judges who were part of our work group that sometimes it's difficult to find someone to serve as a personal representative if the estate has modest assets but complicated assets. So the process will take some time, but the compensation for a personal representative will be limited if the statutory fees are what is permitted. Statutory fees are based on the value of the estate. And a new provision that we are adding, recommending be added, would allow the personal representative before appointment to request that compensation be determined in a different manner, probably on an hourly basis. That determination will be entirely up to the probate judge who would decide to permit that or not. And any distributees of the estate, as well as DHS, would have the opportunity to object. The Dash 1 amendment addresses this point to provide, or just really more to clarify, that even if the distributees or DHS do not object at the outset, that does not mean that they are waiving their right to object at the end of the estate. When the personal representative requests fees at the end of the estate, there is an opportunity to object if the fees seem out of line with the work that was done, and that's the point of the Dash 1 amendment. A couple of other things. There is a change that would require anyone contesting a will to provide notice to the heirs and devisees identified in the petition, not reaching out beyond that, but at least letting people who would be affected by a will contest know that that's happening. There is a change that would permit the probate judge to remove a personal representative for good cause shown. The concern we heard from the probate judges is that sometimes a personal representative may not have been neglectful to the extent that would allow removal under the code as currently written, but is operating in a way that is creating discord and making the likelihood of problems later on as the estate is being administered. And this would allow the probate judge to step in and remove the personal representative before greater problems occurred. It is not, and our report makes clear in terms of the legislative history, this is not intended to get into a discussion about which personal representative is more suitable. It's only to step in, for the court to step in, if there is a real problem that the court sees with a particular personal representative. There are revisions that provide better guidance on what constitutes presentment of a claim. Some creditors like to file claims with the probate court. DHS in particular prefers to file a claim with the probate court to give the court notice of a claim. And the bill just, again, clarifies that that does not constitute presentment. The information has to be given to the personal representative. There is also a provision that would allow the personal representative to authorize presentment by electronic mail or by facsimile, which may make that process a little easier. There is a provision that provides priority for claims when the estate is insolvent, and the bill adds as a priority item expenses of administration of a protective proceeding for the decedent before the decedent's death. Sometimes the problem is that the decedent required protective proceeding. That proceeding, of course, ends when the decedent dies, and there may be expenses that remain unpaid. So those expenses are given priority. There are already, as a priority item, medical expenses of the decedent, and a concern was that we don't want medical expenses to encompass a broad range of things, including visits by family members to a loved one in the hospital, for example. And so there is attention to limiting the priority to actual caregiving or medical expenses and not a more expansive definition. And then finally, there are changes in the provisions regarding disallowance of claims. There has been a problem that the probate judges have seen where personal representatives just disallow all the claims, perhaps because they don't quite understand the impact of allowing or disallowing claims. So there is a change that would require the personal representative to include a reason for a disallowance of a claim, but that statement is not to be considered an admission that is the only reason, and the personal representative can later assert other defenses to the claims. We had very good process in our work group with representatives from different sections of the bar, from DHS, from the Attorney General's office, and other sections of the Attorney General's office. And that all of that information, I think, led to a very strong bill.
Yes, Chair Barker, Vice Chair Williamson, Commissioner Williamson, and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Laura Hansel, and I'm the Deputy Director of the Oregon Law Commission. I just wanted to tell you a little bit more about what we think the value of this bill is. We actually make a lot of jokes at the Oregon Law Commission, or at least I do, about the exciting nature of the bills we bring you. But it really actually, you know, there's several lawyers on this committee. It's really important work. And so for this work group specifically, they brought their first bill to you in 2015, but the work group actually formed in 2013. Just since April 1st of last year, while we were still running a bill, the work group continued to forge ahead and actually met 19 times to date since last April 1st. Those meetings are generally 2.5 hours long. A lot of preparation, a lot of work goes into each of those. So I've actually tried to capture the value, to put a dollar amount on that for you. And just using 2012 numbers from the Oregon State Bar Economic Survey, they use a median salary of $225 an hour for lawyers. If you apply that just to the work group meetings, plus 1 hour of prep time, just for the voting members of this work group, you come up with an amount of $299,250 at the value. But the value is actually much more for a couple of reasons. This number does not account for the interested persons that also play a really crucial role in this work group specifically. We have 20 voting members. We have an additional 20 folks who come to our meetings almost every time and contribute quite a lot that brings the product before you. This number also does not capture staff time. It does not capture the many, many hours the chair of the work group, the chair of the commission, and Commissioner Gary and and our reporter also put into the product. So I really think actually that number, it comes out close to $1 million. And so that is all work that is done by the Oregon Law Commission to better the law in Oregon. And the goal is to not only provide clarity of law, but also consistency and reasonable expectations of what the outcome in a court might be. We hope to cut down on litigation, create more court efficiency, save everybody some time and money. So really proud of the product we brought you again this year, and we hope to see you again next year as well. So we hope you will adopt the Dash One amendments and give this a due pass recommendation. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions? Representative Vile.
No question. I just wanted to say that I did read this in its entirety over the weekend, and I'm very impressed with the work that went into making sure that everything fits together throughout the bill. So thank you very much for bringing it.
Thank you.
I'm really impressed you read it over the weekend. Okay, thank you. Panel.
Thank you.
It's not ready. Can't move it.
Yeah.
Okay. We're in a work session on House Bill 2986.
Mr. Chair, I move the Dash One amendments into House Bill 2986.
Representative Williams moves the Dash One amendments into House Bill 2186. Is there any discussion?
29.
I'm sorry. 2986. Thank you. Dyslexia strikes again. Are there any objections? Seeing none, so ordered. And we're not able to move the bill today because we're waiting for the fiscal. Okay, thank you. Committee stand at ease for a few minutes. Representative Huffman's on. They don't.
We can open
those. Yeah. Call the committee, House Judiciary Committee, back to order. And I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bills 3047 and 3049.
Thank you, Chair Barker, members of the committee. Both House Bill 3047 and House Bill 3049 were brought to us by Representative Huffman. In 3047, and both bills deal with drones, actually, but 3047 concerns an area of using drones to do things as such things as planting seedlings from the air. The measure would exempt from the crime of weaponizing a drone those who give notice to the Oregon State Police, the Department of Aviation, users in an area, and who are operating a drone under FAA authorization. The measure does not exempt the operator from other crimes or civil liabilities. There are Dash 2 and Dash 3 amendments. The Dash 2 amendment removes the requirement that the projectile be other than bullet, than a bullet, requires notification be given to any agency that issues a permit or license for the activity requiring the use of the drone, in addition to notice to the Department of Aviation and the Oregon State Police. The Dash 3 amendment allows law enforcement agencies to use the drone to acquire information from an accident scene in addition to the currently authorized use. On the Dash 2 and Dash 3, there is no revenue or fiscal impact. On the 3049, that measure prohibits hovering over property for more than 60 seconds unless otherwise exempt. That would be privately owned property. There is a Dash 3 amendment. The Dash 3 amendment prohibits operation of a drone in a manner so as to intentionally or recklessly harass or annoy the owner or occupant of privately owned premises. Provides an exception for flight with consent, flight for commercial purposes in compliance with the FAA, or authorized flight by law enforcement and law enforcement. Specifies that this violation is a Class B violation and there is no revenue and a minimal fiscal impact.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Barker. Committee members, John Huffman, State Rep for House District 59. Did you have any questions?
Yeah.
Okay. As you know, nothing against Whitney, but Chana is not sitting in that seat today. And for those of us that Chana works so closely with to chair our work groups, that can be traumatic. But anyway.
To avoid meeting with you here. Go have a baby.
She will do it. Thank you, Representative Greenleg. I resemble that remark. So, House Bill 3047, and Aaron Knott is here to correct anything I get wrong, and he's going to kick me under the table or slap me on the back of the head. I'm not sure. 3047, the origin dates back to Representative Krieger. For those of you that were on the committee when we passed one of our last drone bills, he said, I would like to see you all work on an exception because you couldn't weaponize a drone, so you couldn't shoot a projectile. And he said there are agricultural needs, there are other needs which have come to the fore since that conversation, where something could be considered a projectile, but it is beneficial. One example, SOAR Oregon wants this summer to be able to use drones at the Warm Springs testing area to drop spheres, and those are the spheric cylinders for creating backfires in firefighting. They're currently being dropped from helicopters, or historically dropped from helicopters. They think drones would be a great use for starting backfires, dropping the spheres. With the current law, they can't really do that and be legal. So that's just one example of a number that we've identified. And so instead of having a laundry list of permissible projectiles or things that you would shoot or drop from a drone, we've tried to go more from a authorization to fly and authorization to be able to do a certain type of action. The spheres, and I have firefighting, you're flying under a, is it an FIR or FRI?
TFR.
See, I knew it was some of the alphabet. I just couldn't quite zone in on what that was. So, you know, there are oversight authority that give allowances to do certain things. And so that's what we're trying to get at in the meat of 3047. Madam Chair,
yes.
Would you like for Aaron to, do you want us to talk to 3047 first?
Sure.
And get that and ask yes. questions okay. in?
I just had a question about that last observation by Representative Huffman. So does the bill then require that a temporary flight rule be instituted in order to do that drop, or would it allow the people that are going to do the drop just to give notice and do it?
Madam Chair, Representative Vile, I am not an expert on all of the different authorizations, but my understanding is, and if I get hit in the back of the head, I'll know I was wrong,
TFR.
Wait, you got to come up, Mike, identify yourself for the record. No testifying from the back of the room. Sorry.
I'm sorry, and I intend to testify regarding these bills, but I only offer my expertise. My name is Patrick Sherman. I'm a drone operator in Oregon. And a TFR is actually an acronym for Temporary Flight Restriction, which typically they're used in many cases, but a prominent one in this application is over, say, the scene of a firefighter where firefighting aircraft are operating and they don't want uninvolved civilian aircraft or drones operating in that same space. So that's not a temporary flight rule, it's a temporary flight restriction. And if I certainly don't want to describe your bill, but as I understand it, the TFR would have no bearing on this one way or the other. If a person wanted to operate a drone within an area defined by a TFR, they would need whatever permission from the FAA, regardless of what the drone's mission was. And if, obviously, if they didn't have that, they're not going to fly legally in that TFR. And so they're sort of operating on parallel tracks that never cross each other. It would be legal to use a drone to deploy something resembling a projectile, you know, provided these, you know, the right agencies were notified, and or it can be legal to operate a drone in an area just, you know, covered by a TFR, but there's really no interface between the two.
Thank you.
Representative Post.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The ghost of Wayne Krieger. I just keep thinking that right now. After that. Didn't he say something about cows and stuff too?
Uh-huh.
Okay, yeah. That wasn't my question, but I'm starting to remember. So the Dash 2 removes requirement that projectile be other than bullet. So it can shoot bullets and other stuff. So where are you trying to get? I guess you lost me somewhere with where are you trying to get with it? You want to take away the bullets or you want to add bullets?
Madam Chair and Representative Post, I'm going to take a stab at that, and then I'm going to ask Aaron to weigh in. The bottom line is we're trying to get away from the laundry list of what you can and cannot do we're trying to get more to the it's allowable under certain authorizations, permits, and processes.
Okay.
Mr. Knott.
Thank you, Chair Williamson, members of the committee. My name is Aaron Knott. I'm the legislative director for the Attorney General of the Oregon Department of Justice. This is one of roughly 75 work groups of Representative Huffman's on which I've been conscripted to serve. Chair Williamson, Representative Post, there is an answer to your question. So we initially spoke about bullets, and we realized that we thought maybe that was the wrong philosophical approach. Members of our task force realized that you could maybe weaponize a drone so that it could fling darts, knives, bombs, nunchucks. So we didn't want to emphasize bullets unnecessarily. Instead, we took a process-based approach to this, where you have to get certification from the FAA, you have to check in with all of the applicable state agencies, you have to notify the public. Even the term bullet, to use Representative Krieger's, I think, now somewhat infamous example, might be the best way to inoculate a cow using a drone, which is what I think he had in mind. And I do want to offer the assurance that if a drone operator with a cow vaccination drone sort of decided to start spraying cow vaccines at people in a way that was hazardous to the public, we do have applicable laws that would continue to exist. Reckless endangerment is a Class A misdemeanor. This only affects your ability to even possess a drone capable of firing a projectile. So there are other laws in place.
That was great.
Bullets, yes, or bullets, no?
Chair Barker, Representative Greenlick, bullets with all of the exceptions and procedural steps that are, well, not exceptions, procedural steps that are contemplated here, something like a bullet might be usable by a drone.
It could be bullet plus other things.
Right. We didn't want to overemphasize the nature of the projectile itself. It seems like so many different projectiles could be dangerous, and bullet has the potential to be useful.
Mr. Chair. You could put your eye out with that, you know.
Well, and it's also, Aaron, not underrepresenting weaponization, right? Limiting it to bullets would underrepresent the concern we had with weaponizing drones.
Chair Barker, Representative Williamson, weaponizing drones is still absolutely prohibited.
Okay, there you go.
And
I just had a slight follow-up. I just so I understand. Now I understand. I got where you're going. Are we wanting? We, meaning you guys, wanting both the Dash 2 and the Dash 3, or is one overriding the other?
Both. Okay. Correct?
Okay.
Yes. Chair Barker, Representative Post, we actually haven't spoken much yet to the Dash 3. The Dash 3 does something separate.
Okay.
So there's an existing allowance by law enforcement to use a drone for the purposes of capturing or investigating an already existing crime scene. I mean, you can think of how that might work. You've got a lot of physical evidence on the ground. You need an aerial shot, something with some zoom capability. You want a good digitized copy. Makes a lot of good investigative sense. We've simply added or accident scene because there are non-criminal interactions where many of the same dynamics will apply. So that's the Dash 3s.
And Mr. Chair and Representative Post, so the Dash 3 is specifically to the accident scene edition, and Kevin Campbell's here to testify on behalf of that if you'd like for him to, because law enforcement supports it. Frankly, this was one of those things that in the early years of the work group, I thought that we had accident scene in with crime scene, but somehow it got dropped out, and it wasn't intended to be dropped out. What was intended really to remain are the things that will remain that are the restrictions around that use. You know, there was talk about, well, if we captured a criminal activity going on adjacent to the crime scene on private property, wouldn't you want us to use the footage that, you know, and it's like, no, we don't. If the purpose of the drone is to gather footage on a crime scene or accident scene footprint, that's what the drone use is for. You can't use the footage for anything else outside of that. That remains. Am I correct, sir?
I believe so.
Questions, anybody?
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. House Bill 3049. Is an intent in operation bill, and probably the best example. I imagine most of our offices, I know Department of Justice, the Department of Aviation. Every sheriff and police department in Oregon has probably gotten numerous calls about the unknown neighbor, sometimes known, sometimes unknown. I wish Representative Johnson was here because he has a specific story about a neighbor. And they got a drone for Christmas. It's manned with a video camera on the belly. And they just like flying over neighbors' property and capturing anything and everything. And that upsets a lot of our constituents. And so what we were trying to do was figure out how to give somebody a right of action or give law enforcement the ability to say, you can't annoy or harass or be a nuisance or fly recklessly or endanger somebody. Now, some of that stuff is covered by FAA and their rules, but it gets a little tougher when you're over somebody's backyard. They're still in FAA airspace, but how can we give a landowner like Representative Mark Johnson the ability, because it's illegal to shoot the drone down, and if you wave them off and they don't go, there's really nothing you can do without a little help. And then, as Representative Johnson said, you know, the next day you go on Facebook and YouTube and you see your wife and your property and stuff in your backyard where you thought you had a reasonable right to privacy, and all of these pictures are being streamed on the internet. And so that's a big part of what we're trying to get to here, but at the same time, to make sure that we word it in a way that proper uses are allowable. Is John still? Yep, John's still in the room. Been working with AT&T, for example. They use drones to look at their lines, survey their lines. They fly over private property sometimes to do that. And so, you know, we want to make sure that we get in there that, you know, we're not trying to kill that kind of stuff. We understand there are legitimate business uses that we want to make sure are permissible. And so, again, you're going to have some testimony here regarding that and what maybe even tweaking some words, but what we think should be allowable.
Chair Barker, members of, oh, sorry.
I can wait. Whatever.
As soon as he's done.
Okay. Well, go ahead, please.
Thank you. Chair Barker, members of the committee, again, Aaron Knott here on behalf of the Attorney General, Oregon Department of Justice. All I wanted to add is where we perceive that the Dash 3 amendments to House Bill 3049 sort of fit into existing crimes. On the one side, you have the crime of reckless endangerment. That is a crime. It's a Class A misdemeanor, maximum penalty up to a year. It's relatively significant. That would apply when somebody is operating a drone in a way that's really placing you at danger. They're flying at your face. You're ducking. Like, there's an articulable risk to persons or property. Then on the other side, you have existing invasion of privacy law, which would apply when a drone is catching you in a private space, a space where you have a reasonable expectation of privacy. Those of you who are on the committee either last year or the year before may recall all of the constitutional tricks and the difficulty that can go into establishing that sort of a case because it comes down to reasonable expectation of privacy. What neither of those cover and what I think 3049-3 is trying to address are circumstances where somebody is trying to annoy or harass you with a drone. They're circling your backyard over and over and over. It's not close enough to hit you, and they're not necessarily even filming you, but they're making it very hard for you to enjoy your own use of your property. And you'll note, whereas the other two crimes I've described are Class A misdemeanors, this is a Class B violation. I think there's a recognition in the bill that this conduct is much less serious, but it's still serious enough that it can really kind of ruin your day and damage your ability to enjoy your property. So again, this has to be done intentionally or recklessly. That recklessly standard, that's a gross deviation from the standard of care that a reasonable person would use under similar circumstances, which, and I want this to be in the legislative record, is not going to pick up a lot of the commercial activity that we've had described. AT&T checking their lines, that's just not going to be reckless. I just don't see any way it can get to that.
Why can't you shoot them now?
Chair Barker, Representative Greenlick, that would be the unlawful discharge of a firearm, in which I think has the potential to violate both state and municipal law.
Even if we made it legal in the case of over 60 seconds hovering over my yard? I don't have a weapon. I'm not likely to do it.
You don't have a yard.
No.
I was saying, in the
park. I don't even have a yard anymore. But it does seem to me you could be annoyed enough to want to do that.
I wonder if you could get a drone tag.
I see a tag on your deer license. Oh, yeah. Right.
Ladies and gentlemen, Patrick Sherman again. It's a violation of federal law to discharge a weapon at an aircraft, which I think we can all agree is a good thing. And the definition of aircraft promulgated by the FAA now includes drones. So it would be a federal felony to take that step. So all right, I'd strongly recommend you not do that.
If you shoot from underneath camouflage netting, they might not be able to tell where it's coming from. Representative Springer.
Mr. Chair, in looking at the bill, question for you. It says 60 seconds. We've all seen a million videos, and there's a lot that can be filmed in 60 seconds. So why 60 seconds? To me, that seems like an extraordinarily long time. And Springers would get really cranky on their property.
Would you like
saw somebody hover for
60 seconds, Representative?
And they do have one.
Mr. Chair and Representative Springer, my understanding is that that was in the base bill, but not in the amendments. We were running into similar challenges about, and we had started out just trying to, I mean, we were like, would it be 55 feet and 60 seconds? Should it be 65 feet and 30 seconds? And so we had to clean this up. But, you know, on a serious note, and I don't know if you guys get these comments in your offices or not, or if it's just because I'm the drone guy, but and this story was told to me as the truth, that there was a proctologist that was not on a ground floor, and they had the curtains open to the room, and an exam was being given, and they looked up, and there was a drone hovering outside the window, capturing the excitement. And you know, hospitals have expressed concern from the Hospital Association about, because apparently some member hospitals had reported, you know, that drones were hovering outside patient rooms. What can we do about it? And so it is a real nuisance, and it's frustrating, and we just think people should have some sort of an ability to say, stop, and I mean it.
There's been cases I've seen, too, where in an apartment in Seattle, a woman was getting dressed and went hovering. And it turns out that was a real estate agent just filming the building. You know, it was inadvertent, but nonetheless.
Sure.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. And this is probably for Aaron. So how does this 3049, I guess, as amended, interface with criminal harassment or stalking?
Chair Barker, Representative Williamson, first with the issue of harassment. Harassment is typically harmful or offensive contact, as it's normally defined, or the threat thereof. It's oriented much more towards an interaction that's physical. It's just not, doesn't result in a physical injury. Stalking.
But being buzzed by a drone could get you there, I would think.
Does the Chair Barker, Representative Williams, I'd probably want to look at the statute to see where the element of touching comes in, because I know that at least some species of harassment contact is presumed. I think as to stalking, it would certainly be evidence admissible to demonstrate the intent to stalk. So I think it would be relevant. Drone activity could absolutely help prove the crime of stalking.
Mr. Chair. Representative. Thank you, Mr. Chair. On the dash three, so I think I asked the same question 2 years ago, Aaron, or whenever we did this, and it still bothers me, so I want to make sure I'm understanding this completely. Two subsection one does not apply if the owner or occupant of the privately owned premises consents to the use of the unmanned aircraft system. And by the way, I think it should be required viewing for everybody here to watch Blade Runner. This is very appropriate. This is the world we live in that they dreamed up 40 years ago, whenever that movie was made. When I'm at Autzen Stadium, did I give my consent by buying a ticket? Because it absolutely irritates the snot out of me that I sit there at the game in my tailgate, and there's a thing buzzing over me, filming me, and I can pull up my phone and watch me on my phone, And I didn't give my consent. So by buying a ticket, did I just give my consent? Because this says privately owned premises consents to the use. I didn't consent, but I don't own the property. You see where I'm going?
You want me to answer?
Please.
Okay.
Chair Barker, Representative Post. So I think that that touches on a few different criminal sections. I think the one you're talking about, whereas you're irritated seeing yourself up on the Jumbotron, or that again is going to turn on, I think, an invasion of privacy theory. And that yet in turn is whether you have a reasonable expectation of privacy where you are. I don't think you have a reasonable expectation of privacy in Autzen Stadium.
I mean out in the parking lot.
Oh, you're tailgating.
So when they're tailgating, they're buzzing out there all the time. It doesn't go on the big screen. Somebody's doing it on YouTube. A private person is buzzing those things around the tailgating section. It happens every year. It has ever since these things have come out.
Chair Barker, Representative Post, I'm not sure that changes my answer. I can see why that would be irritating, but I don't know that you have a reasonable expectation of privacy out in the open in the parking lot of Autzen Stadium. So for this bill, again, it would have to come to reckless harass or intentionally harass. So if that same drone, you're tailgating in the parking lot, starts swooping down, hovering over you, making it impossible for you to enjoy the tailgating experience, I think then you'd fall under the purview.
Back with a broom. Okay. There's no law against hitting an airplane with a broom. Oh. So you're...
Ladies and gentlemen, Representative Huffman just asked me to chime in again with my expertise in the subject, and specifically to point out that the FAA prohibits the operation of drones over people uninvolved in the drone activity. So regardless of whether or not it's violating your personal privacy, and I'm sorry that it is, that the person flying that drone is almost certainly operating in contravention of the FAA regulations against flying over people. So that would not, I wasn't there myself. I can't give you a firm thing, but it seems to me better than even odds that would be a violation of the safety rules prescribed by the FAA.
Okay, but that person, so that person may have gotten permission. So you're saying the FAA says no, but if Autzen Stadium or whomever owns that parking lot gave permission to the drone operator, still couldn't?
No, because the FAA is paramount. It's like, say I'm going to book a flight on United Airlines and I want to bring my unstable antique dynamite collection with me. And for some strange reason, United Airlines signs off on this, so I put my dynamite collection in the cargo hold of the aircraft. The FAA is still going to say no, and they get the veto power. Okay. So I could get 100 letters from Autzen Stadium for permission to fly over the crowds or the people in the parking lot. That never makes it okay because the FAA never says it's okay. The FAA has the, as regards safe operations in the airspace, the FAA is the final arbiter, and nobody can override that.
Okay. Mr. Chairman?
Yeah. Mr. Chair, there's some good testimony. I wouldn't mind vacating and allowing it.
Because we're going to need to move along. I'm going to be losing members here, and I'd like to move these two bills today. So,
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mark Peters. John Lithwaite. Linthwaite and Kevin, you're still there. If you want, are you done?
No. Okay. But I'm Patrick, but yes. We'll follow the rules.
Well, pull it.
I wasn't one of the three names called.
Well, go ahead and pull a chair up, and then we'll get this all done because I have people leaving here in a few minutes, so I need. Would like to get a vote. And with that in mind, I'd ask that you keep your testimony short. I don't want to cut you off, but otherwise you'll be losing people here. So please go
Great.
Ahead.
Hello, committee. My name is Mark Peters. I am the work for the Research Office of Oregon State University. Oregon State is probably the largest owner of drones in the state. In fact, I just verified with Oregon Department of Aviation, there's 74 publicly owned drones registered. We have over 40 of them. Last year alone, we completed over 300 missions with drones for research purposes. So we have a very active portfolio, everything from the Arctic to New Zealand, in which we are operating these to advance science and to support our community's economic development. Today I come to you for a request on House Bill 3047. Under Section 2C, the prior notification of 5 days for the law enforcement and of the Oregon Department of Aviation. We have great concerns with this. This would make some of our research a violation of law as written. However, we do have great appreciation for the fact that this is looking to improve opportunities. And so what we'd like to do is ask for consideration for a similar exemption for research purposes that exists for law enforcement purposes, because what we would be seeing is some great opportunities to do things like we talked about inoculating cows. Well, I actually have a researcher that would like to tag whales. We have a researcher going out in Southern Oregon who is going to be monitoring bighorn sheep. All of these have opportunities to improve the quality of life of the wildlife that we work with, to improve our scientific understanding of the environment. And that 5-day prior notification does cause us some challenges. So I would like for the committee and the representatives to take some consideration to that. One other final note, just as a follow-up to the Autzen Stadium, let me just share another more restrictive element that is in play. The FAA on all NCAA sporting events puts what's called a TFR, as you heard about earlier, a temporary flight restriction, with a 3-mile radius around all sporting locations. So in addition to not following the safety mechanisms, they are actually violating airspace rules by flying in that area around those locations. So there are other ways that the FAA puts forth there. The second and last item that I'll point here, more related to 3049, is I encourage the state legislature to look at what federal rules are in place and not to go into areas that are already addressed by those federal rules. In addition, in this case, we have our privacy policies that are in place that would address those issues. However, the concept of addressing hovering would identify an area of regulating national airspace. This is really in the FAA's purview. And so for the sake of the community as a whole within Oregon, the fewer conflicts we have between state regulations and federal regulations, it would encourage and help support the development of the industry as we move forward. That's what I wanted to share with you. Thank you all for your time.
Thank you, and I'd ask you to talk to staff afterwards. And I'm not going to move that bill until we get amendments to cover research. I mean, it really makes sense.
Great. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Please.
Chair Barker, Vice Chairs Olson and Williamson, members of the committee. My name is John Linthwaite. I'm a veteran and owner of Odin Aerial, a small unmanned aerial system imaging company located here in Marion County. And I'd like to explain to you why I'm in support of House Bill 3047. Currently, ORS 837.365 concerning weaponized UAS was a very broadly written catch-all piece of legislation crafted in response to the fears spurred by a YouTube video. I understand citizens' fears and concerns in this area, and I'm not against applying the same types of rules governing the purchase, possession, and use of firearms to UAS. However, the law was so broad, it went beyond just lethal applications applied to the non-lethal as well. UAS technology has the potential to be a lifesaver. UAS technology is currently being used to deliver medical supplies to areas such as Rwanda. There are many search and rescue groups which are attempting to develop means to deliver life-saving items ranging from food, medical supplies, communications, and even flotation devices for drowning persons. We are already seeing the employment of UAS to aid firefighting efforts, and we may even see these systems employed to deliver fire suppression or critical equipment to trap persons in high buildings. Imagine the lives that could have been saved on 9/11 had firefighters simply been able to deliver a rope ladder system to the desperate people trapped above the flames in the World Trade Center. There's a large array of humanitarian-related innovation that is opening up in this field now. In addition, there are potential commercial applications such as aiding arborists in tree climbing or to deter predators from livestock predation. Also, the use of non-lethal taser-style systems could be proved life-saving for law enforcement during any number of scenarios. Finally, there is a very harmless recreational toy UAS market, which is already using lasers and Nerf darts to shoot projectiles at each aircraft for sport, which are affected by this law. The Pacific Northwest is home to many technology companies and is becoming a hub of UAS innovation and has three test ranges. These companies need a legal means to develop these life-saving, harmless technologies. The industry is beginning to grow out of its infancy and is awaiting the next Steve Jobs to come along. The Chinese are already significantly way ahead of us in developing small UAS, and the U.S. is at a disadvantage here. I urge you to support this bill and any others that may seek a reasonable way for companies to move forward in an area and help save lives. Thank you for the opportunity to testify here. I'll be happy to answer any of your questions.
Thank you.
Or also one quick question. Should I move on to the next bill as well?
Yeah, if yes.
Okay. So in reference to House Bill 3049, I'm opposed to it. This bill would be very difficult, in many cases impossible to comply with by well-meaning pilots. It would certainly have a significant financial impact on the pilot's ability to operate and increase conflict with often confrontational property owners. Many types of flight missions require hovering for long periods of time to capture clear images and to safely negotiate terrain, airspace terrain. During a single mission, an aircraft can cross over many types of land-based property boundaries to capture certain types of photographs and perspectives, which often require a certain amount of standoff from that imaging target. These missions may require many minutes of stationary hovering and adjustments to this equipment. Establishing a limitless invisible property boundary into the sky and adding a stressful time limit could result in unintended violations and ultimately pose a safety risk. In addition, the insurance premium litigation risk posed here could also result in prohibitive operating costs for me. This bill gives no specifics on aircraft size, types, altitudes of operations, abilities, and sound output. In most cases, these systems are quieter than the heat pumps attached to people's homes. If broadly interpreted as it is written here, many children on Christmas morning operating a harmless $50 toy could unwittingly find themselves with a $1,000 fine after a harmless misunderstanding with a grouchy neighbor. In closing, I urge you to reject this bill, allow the industry to continue to work with the FAA in crafting these guidelines, and allow existing privacy and nuisance airspace laws to guide us. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Sherman.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for giving me the opportunity to testify today. My name is Patrick Sherman. I'm the founder of the Roswell Flight Test Crew. I'm a manned aircraft pilot and have been flying drones since 2010. I also hold an FAA remote pilot in command certificate. I'm the author of more than 100 published articles on the subject of drones. I speak at events all over the country. I recently returned from Muscat, Oman, where I gave a talk, and later this year I will be visiting Nairobi, Kenya to speak about the use of drones. I just, very briefly, because I know we're pressed for time, I wanted to laud the work the committee is doing on 3047. It seems like you're taking a very good approach to it. I'm very pleased to hear that. Like several other speakers here, I am concerned about 3049. Although I think in the best tradition of a gathering like this, I've come to appreciate the understanding of the people who have drones hovering over their property. And I think this is a thorny issue that was going to have to be worked out at all kinds of levels. I'm opposed to it, first of all, because there are several bills which already cover this, including ORS 837.380, which allows the plaintiff to claim treble damages for trespassing of a drone. That seems like a fairly strong protection, which already exists in Oregon law. And also ORS 163-700 protects against invasion of personal privacy by any means. Going back to 2013 and Oregon House Bill 71, there's always been a tension here about how is a drone any different from a camera on a stick. I get that drones are sort of a new and potentially menacing technology, but just as a drone could hover over your backyard and film you, somebody could tape their cell phone to the end of a stick and hold it up over your fence and capture more or less equivalent footage, and yet we don't prohibit the sale of yardsticks or duct tape. So I would urge that we think very hard and very carefully about zeroing in on one type of technology and instead think about the kind of behavior we want to control. I would also add that no professional would willingly hover, you know, over with the intention of capturing footage. Like you said, he may be hovering over person B's property in order to get a clear shot of person A's property. He's not intentionally filming below him. And one thing I'd really like to say is that too bad Shauna isn't here, because I think there'd be enormous value if we could get some of you folks to actually see some drones in operation. The humorous examples given of drones looking in hospital windows or in the proctologist's office, I can virtually guarantee you the drone could not see through that window. Once you've flown a drone, you appreciate how wide-angle the lens is, and looking inside a window, more often you see reflection. The way the cameras are set up, you don't get good exposure looking from a light environment like the outdoors into a much darker environment. I understand these concerns, and I understand that people feel like they're being watched or spied upon, but as a practical matter, I would guess in 99 out of 100 times that's not what's happening. I actually know the pilots who flew the mission that was mentioned earlier in Seattle, where the woman felt that she was being spied upon. And the actual, specifically what they were doing was they were flying the drone up to give essentially the perspective of what suites were going to look like, the view you would get at different altitudes for a tower that was going to be built. They had no idea that she was there. I mean, that she just didn't exist as far as they were concerned. I occasionally see drones flying around my neighborhood, and I'm not troubled by that because I understand what those operators can see with me at a glance, because I know where the aircraft is, I understand the cameras, but I get that a lot of people don't understand that. I know this is hard because there's so many diversities of opinion here, but I really think the honest key is education all the way around. As he said, Oregon is emerging as a leader in this industry, and I'd hate to see that undermined. I've been a journalist and a public communications professional my whole career, and I know if we pass a bill subtly, trying to address a subtle point, like no hovering over 60 seconds, by the time that reaches the national media, it'll be Oregon passes anti-drone bill. And that's the sort of press we as an industry and as a state trying to capture what's going to be a $100 billion industry in the next 4 years can't afford. So I'd be happy to answer questions, and this is a really complex topic. So.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This isn't a question, it's more of a statement. I thank you for not moving these bills today, because at this point I came in more comfortable than I am now, and I think a lot of the testimony we've just heard is not on the amendments of 3049. I'm not sure, so I hope that we're revisiting this issue and having an additional clear conversation.
Yes, we will.
Thank you.
Anything further? Okay, thank you. Yeah, we will be revisiting these before we move them.
I, certainly speaking for myself, and I bet these other guys too, we'd be happy to come back and answer your questions in a more detailed format, provide a demonstration. Just let us know what we can do to help.
Okay, thank you. Kevin, did you want to? Okay.
No, I don't need to.
Okay, I'm going to.
I want to hear you, Kevin.
I'm going to close the hearings on House Bill 3047, 3049, and we'll stand adjourned, committee. 9 and we'll stand adjourned, committee. 47, 34.